There is no mezuzah in my story, but it is a story about passage. And I felt in the times that we are right now, we really need a story of optimism and what America means to a lot of us, right? It is the land of freedom, the land of just wonderful things. So, without further ado, my story. I'd like to bring you back to 1975, late April 1975 to be exact, and it is Saigon, Vietnam. This is the country I was born in. I had lived there for 6 years with my parents, and at that time I had a baby sister who was 9 months old. And if you recall, 1975 was a pivotal year in the Vietnam War. By April, the American forces were pulling out, and everyone was trying to get out of Vietnam, my family included. My parents didn't have the money to get us out because many gold bars, okay? And I'm not even sure we had one gold bar, okay? But for what it's worth, they decided they should pack a suitcase in case the opportunity arose. So we have one yellow suitcase that was packed with clothes for my parents, myself, and my 9-month-old sister. I think that suitcase was mostly filled with formula and diapers. And we didn't have, paper diapers then, so it was probably cloth diapers. Anyways, it was feeling a little depressing until this one day in late April. It's about 4 days before the end of the war. My mother, who worked for Chase Manhattan Bank, she got a message that she is to bring her immediate nuclear family to the airport meeting point in an hour. Yeah. Okay, so she's trotting off from work. She worked for Chase Manhattan Bank. It was, she worked at the head office, and she went and fetched my father from his high secret, top secret meeting at our White House, you know, in Saigon. He was a member of the cabinet, the president's cabinet. I don't know. So my mom literally pulled him out of the meeting because his secretary said, it's a very important meeting that he's in. Yeah, right. We're losing the war. We're going to die. I mean, what? And then they went and fetched my sister and I from my grandmother's house. My grandmother has this ritual where she goes to church twice a day, 6 a.m. and 6 p.m. She's done it forever, as long as I've known her. And she was at church, of course, probably praying that we'll get out of the country. So we didn't get to say goodbye to my grandmother, who really is my second mother. We got to say goodbye to my grandma's housekeeper. Okay, so mom now has just the immediate nuclear family. We're at the meeting point outside of the airport. First obstacle, how do you get into the airport? Because there is a law that you cannot leave the country if you're between the ages of 18 and 35. It's wartime. Most of the men, so the families that are with us are Vietnamese employees of Chase Manhattan Bank with their nuclear families, right? And we have a 27-year-old fearless leader from Chase Manhattan Bank sent over from Thailand. He got the assignment because he didn't have a wife, he didn't have family, so if they lost him, not as big of damage. His initial mission was actually to take out, to help bring the top 10 to 12 executives from the bank out of the country. And when he saw how dire the situation was, he changed his plans. He navigated in less than 2 weeks. He wanted to get all the employees and their families out. He got out 113 people. That's later on, okay? But I give you a little hint. He maneuvered that he would adopt all of us. That's where the paperwork came in, right? Is that he adopted 113 Vietnamese people. Ralph White is his name. He has a book if you want to read about it. It's really good. Anyways, we're at the airport again. Sorry. And we're on a bus. school bus kind of thing. And, you know, what are we going to do with the men? So you hide them, not me, but, you know, all the grown-ups, hide the men under the seats, under the suitcases, have the women and children sit on top, have our little, have our American leader go, there's only women and children. This is a mission trip. But in order to, you know, the military police that would come on. But we don't want them to look too deeply in the bus. So, of course, our good American leader bribed our bus driver. Could you make the lights not work in the bus? Uh-huh. Yeah. Back in wartime, lots of briberies. And it really did work. So bus driver, as the military police, come on to the bus. Of course, everybody on the bus is holding their breath. He's flicking something and says, the lights don't work, you know. And I don't know, like two or three police officers got on, whole military gear. And they're like, oh, yeah, kind of looks like just women and children. Okay, you guys can go. We got through the gates of the airport. That was a huge obstacle. Then we get inside the airport. We are not the only people trying to leave Vietnam. There's hundreds, if not thousands, of people trying to get out of Vietnam, okay? And the only flights there are military planes because America was evacuating its military force from Vietnam. Again, our good friend, the leader, he negotiated something with some of the high-ranking commanders that were in the airport at the time, and he finagled to get us on a military cargo plane. Yes. I was very excited. My first plane ride. Woohoo! Military plane is probably not what I was thinking of. I don't know if any of you have experienced a military cargo plane. It is It's two rows of seats on the sides. It wasn't meant to transport humans. It was meant to transport ammunition, artillery, gear. You know, it is not padded, so it's very loud and noisy. It's not temperature controlled, so it might also be really cold. And there's no, you know, like lighting, the stuff that they do now on the planes. No. So anyways, not what I expected for my first plane ride, but that's okay. We were going to leave, you know. In our plane was the Vietnamese passengers, our leader, and lots of military, heavily armed military soldiers, American soldiers. And they were interspersed with us. The first time I ever saw a loaded machine gun and one of somebody opened a window and it was like ready to like shoot out of the plane if they needed to. Yeah, a little scary. I don't remember. It seemed like forever, many hours on that plane, that dark, cold plane. And we finally landed in Guam, then had another to refuel and get some paperwork. And then we proceeded on to Camp Pendleton, where all the refugees had to come through at some point. We finally get to the plane ride that I've been thinking what plane rides are. From Camp Pendleton, we actually took a plane, either a Pan Am or a TWA. Do you all remember from the 70s? Yeah. Okay. So we do get to our final destination, and it is New York City. Okay. And we are greeted, and this is what I mean about the optimism. We were greeted, us refugees were greeted by the loveliest American families. They were volunteers from Chase Manhattan Bank, employees, executives, and they chose to volunteer to host Vietnamese families until these families got on their feet. We were really lucky, our sponsor family, beautiful, like 1970s, just TV family. Dad is a bank executive. Mom is a stay-at-home mom. Three little boys right around my age. But they drew us in. They integrated us into their extended family. They drew us into their community. We never felt like the only Asians in their community, but we were. And we might have been the first Asians that their community had ever met. But we felt always very included, okay? And here's the thing. This family, the parents, gave up their primary bedroom suite with an ensuite bathroom to our family of four. Yeah, it was the biggest room I'd ever seen in my life. Okay, I was like, wow. And where did the parents sleep? They slept on the pullout couch in the family room for 6 months while we stayed with them. Yeah. So what's my story? And we continue to be in touch with them. And the father would come and get us after we got our own place but didn't have a car. He would come and get us on Saturday so we could spend the weekends with them out on Long Island in the fresh air and, you know, open land. So my story is kindness is still out there. I know it is. I know it has to be out there, right? So when you're feeling unoptimistic about the current times, I wanted to share that story. There were endless people who were helpers in our lives. It started with the dude who was sent to rescue 10 people, and he rescued 113 of us. You know, there were commanders there, military officials who, I don't know, he was able to negotiate with to get us on a plane where so many hundreds and thousands were trying to get out at the same time. And then the communities that, the people who welcomed us and the communities that we were taken into. So when you're feeling a little hopeless about the geopolitical situation right now, I want you to remember that there are always helpers out there. Thanks.